different. We are on stage with several of our friends. Real quickly, we had three trips. We had two to Brazil and one to Alaska. We had a trip to Manaus. So how many of you guys went to Manaus and did construction? Okay, awesome. This is not the whole team. Some have already moved off to college and some of them couldn't make it today. But we went to Rio on a prayer trip, and that is who? All right, y'all too. And then the red church, y'all are Alaskas. Awesome. Okay, so that's kind of what the three trips that Bulverde Baptist Church did this summer, starting back in, I guess, May it was, Phil, right? Okay, so I'm going to turn it over to Phil, and Phil's going to walk us through kind of what the trip looked like and how much it cost and what they did and those kinds of things.
Okay, well, the first trip, our objective was to build a house church for the Brazilian Baptist Home Mission Board in a city called Águia in the state of Amazonas. Our church invested $7,500. Each missionary, besides being gone for 12 days of their time, paid $800 in their airfare to Manaus, and in addition to that, they had passports and visas and shots and other expenses that were almost as much as the airfare, and this added up, for some quite a bit. We accomplished providing a place for two ladies, they're 19 and 21 years old, to live, as well as a worship place for them. You'll see it's a little bit different than what we would think of, but it's very adequate for what they need there. And they told me since we've been there that the work has grown a lot. It was a tremendous encouragement for them. And they have two or three other places where they're looking for people to build also. There's 10,000 villages like the one that we were in. They're only accessible, most of them, by boat. So it was a challenge.
Awesome. So real quickly, what we're going to do is kind of ask these guys and ladies kind of how God impacted them, what they learned the most, what was the most awkward thing. So, Jason, you're on the end, so you get the hot seat. You can grab a mic right there in front of you. What impacted you the most while being on that trip? Now we're working. They said you weren't on. Flick up. There you go.
There you are.
On?
There
All
we
right.
go. Awesome.
I think the biggest thing for me was just seeing the trickle effect of how money in the offering plate here and prayers and encouragement and even help with some of the doctors in our congregation helped us out with shots and pills and stuff like that. That trickle effect from that to what we were able to do to these two girls that we were able to help out. And then beyond that, it just continued on and on because this was a very small portion of the total ministry that's going on there in Brazil. So it was just encouraging to be a cog in that wheel for the overall mission of what's going on in that country.
Awesome. Joe, tell us a little about what were some of the most difficult things you had to overcome by being in a different country and doing the construction? What were some of the obstacles you guys had to overcome? Joe Brewer.
You know, God just kind of walks you through all those obstacles. I'll tell you, when Phil asked about share something with the church, it was where seeing those two girls, those young women, with a passion for the Lord, we were there working with our hands, and they're there working with their hearts in terms of sharing and Christ with that community. So for us, the sweat and the rain, and didn't have a whole lot of mosquitoes, but you know, it was great. It was a great bonding time. This is a great bunch of men I had a chance to work with.
Awesome. All right, Mr. Unick, tell us a little bit about how you were impacted personally during the trip.
I think a lot of it was exactly what Joe said. Those gals were awesome, and just to see their commitment to Christ was what can you say? So that's kind of what really struck me.
Okay. Last but not least.
I was told I wouldn't have to say anything. But I think what I liked was as we were building in a small community, we became the center point. I mean, we were the entertainment.
I can see that.
Setting up chairs across the street to see what these crazy people, how they build with different tools and stuff. But you could see by the time the church was dedicated and we were leaving, they were still hanging out at the church because it was a central location. It was shaded. It had a breeze through it, which was not very popular in that town.
Now, Phil, talk to us a little bit about the project. We're seeing some of these pictures here. This master bathroom as just popped up. Talk to us a little bit about what is this structure that you built? What was the function of it? How big was it? What did it do? What is it supposed to do?
Well, one of the challenges in these villages is there aren't apartments, there aren't places for rent. So when they try to place some of these missionaries in a new village, the biggest challenge for them in a lot of ways is just finding a place for them to live. They had a house that they had managed to rent, and that's where we stayed while we were there. But it was the bathroom facility was very lacking. That's why we bathed in the river with the piranhas. But just having a place for them to live is a big challenge. So the back part of the building is an apartment for these missionaries to live in. The front part, which is open, but it's very hot there, and they don't need a closed area, is where they have the worship time. This little village, ironically, had a concrete street down the middle of it for about three blocks, but there was absolutely no cars in the community because it's only accessible by boat. But it's a very popular area for the kids to play and come home from school and all, and this property is right on the middle of that street, so it gets lots of visibility, and it'll offer the opportunity for them to have a place to congregate for other activities and events there in the community.
How big is the community currently?
I think they said it had about 270 people.
Okay, and how many are currently attending that church or is planning to attend the church?
Oh, you can see from the dedication service, there was, 25, 30, maybe? Something like that.
Awesome. Now, going back to the construction a little bit, you guys had to work with, you had some power tools, and then you also didn't have, OSHA was not necessarily the most, would frown upon this place. Someone share with me some of the obstacles you had with, kind of building here in America, and then going into Brazil and what that looked like.
We broke all the OSHA rules.
You broke all the OSHA rules. All right, so anything specific? Oh, yeah, that was one of their, they went on fishing trip and they caught Michael. So that was a fun experience. So real quickly, tell us a little about what some of those obstacles were in building. You say you broke all the OSHA rules. Give us a little bit of idea what that looked like.
Well, they asked if we could do electrical, and that's like, yeah, and then trying to get used to what they considered electrical with a breaker box hanging from the power pole, just two wires running down, and you just, to make a connection, you stripped the wire, you wrapped it around and electrical taped it. That was code for the city.
So. Yeah, no conduit or anything like that. I think the biggest challenge for us in a lot of ways is we could only take the tool, only had the tools to work with that we could take in the country in our luggage. And we had a company ladder. They provided a ladder for us that was kind of rickety, and every time we turned around, it was, Can I use the ladder? We had one ladder between us, so that was a challenge.
Awesome. Well, moving on to our next trip, we went back to Brazil about a month later to Rio. So, Phil, give us an overview on what that looked like.
Okay, the objective for Rio was a prayer walk to help plant Cell Church in an upper middle class area in a condominium where this man and his wife are living. They have no support from any other church. This is just something that God placed on their heart. And so they pay $540 a month for the rental of the apartment, plus another $490 for their condominium fee, plus utilities. So they have no support in this, but they just felt like this is where God wanted them to plant a church. And they're doing it through cells in this condominium, which is seven buildings that are part of the condominium, has about 2,000 people living in it. Our church invested about $2,500 in this. We were gone for 9 days. Each person that went paid around $800 of their own money, and in addition to that, of course, the passport and visa as well. We accomplished quite a bit, I think, in the short period of time that we were there. We were able to see the first meeting in their home, and every week that has grown, and now they have two cell groups that are meeting on a weekly basis, and each week they send us pictures, and there's more and more people attending those, so it's been a great encouragement to that couple and to the work there as a whole.
So you guys, there's just two of you, so you get a little bit more time to share. So, oh yeah, you're thinking, oh, wonderful, just what you wanted to do. So Barb, you got the microphone. Tell us a little bit about some of the obstacles you had to overcome, some of the things you had to step out of your comfort zone, and maybe how God used those things in your life.
First and foremost, in my heart, mission is not my forte. But for this mission, I read what Phil wanted to do. And my Bible says, go ye therefore and teach. That's a command for all believers to do. Go ye therefore. So I said, okay, I'm stepping out on faith. And I did. And it was awesome because we prayed. I can pray. If I don't do anything else, I can pray to my God. Phil, to me, was Aaron to Moses. So he was our interpreter. It was an awesome, awesome feeling walking down the streets, looking at the buildings, praying for who's inside the buildings, for the children, for, you know, dead souls. I can do that. And so I challenge everybody, just God has something for you to do. Just step out on faith and just do it. That's my challenge, and I will do it again for prayer.
I want to say something real quickly. This picture right here is an offering to the spirits that I saw one morning when I was up jogging. All of those things are symbolic, but this is left over from the Africans that came with some of the mysticism and different things, and it's combined with Catholicism. It's just a conglomeration of ideas that people have about how they worship. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Say one more thing.
Yeah.
You may not see the fruits of your labor right then and there, but God will show you. He showed us every day something new that he's working for the souls of Brazil. And today, is it like 20 that they have now in this little group that it only started with two, and then us three praying along the streets, and now they have 20 in the clique. So God is working. You may not see it when you're in the environment that you're in while doing your mission, but just hold on. God will show you.
Wonderful. All right, Diva, the floor is yours.
I'm glad I don't have to do this in two sentences. That's what they told me originally. Okay. Those of you who know me know that I talk a lot and that I'm honest. I was not planning to go on any mission trips. And this lady approached me and asked me to go with her. And my prayer was, God, if you want me to go, I will, but you know I don't want to. And have someone else step up. Well, no one else stepped up. And as I passed the marquee at the church this morning, it says, put God first, and you will see God in everything. And as Barbara said, we did see God in everything. One thing that was special to me, one day as we were out prayer walking, Cleverson, the pastor, and his wife were praying for some Christian couples that were grounded in the Word to come alongside and help them. So as we're walking, he gets a phone call from his wife who's at the dentist, and she needs money. He needed to go to a nearby bank that he was not familiar with and take care of that. So he told us to sit there and have coffee, and he would be back. He comes back in a few minutes, walking across the plaza, literally raising his hands and praising God. At the bank, as he was inquiring and asking for help of what he needed to do, he was introduced to a Christian lady who had recently moved to the area, and they were looking for a church. So, as the marquee said, put God first, and you will see God in everything.
So you mentioned that this is a prayer prayer trip, and we've also heard that you didn't always see the immediate fruits of what you were doing. Outside of the growth of the cell group you've seen so far, Phil, you know, any of you guys, have y'all seen any other things that have been, you know, fruit of that time?
Well, I like to talk.
Well, just so you know, the time slide came up.
Okay, I'm sorry. Well, Cleverson took us to meet a couple in their 80s, a couple he had been someone had asked him to connect with this couple and visit them because the man had heart issues. So he had just been visiting them as a friend. And he had us go with them. Very gracious, wealthy couple, lived in a penthouse. And so Phil asked us to give a brief testimony. And Barbara gave a brief testimony. I gave a brief testimony. And as she spoke, I saw the man nodding. When I gave my testimony, I focused on the fear that I had of death before I came to know Christ. And the man said, "I'm afraid to die." Well, we saw him and his sister-in-law accept Christ there in their home.
That's awesome. Okay, our last trip, just most recently, within the last 2 or 3 weeks, we were in Alaska. So Phil, kind of walk us through that. It wasn't a foreign mission trip, but it's definitely foreign to most of us.
Yes. Well, GraceWorks is an organization that works out of Anchorage, Alaska, and they have groups come in from all over the country. They try to have 100 groups a summer, and they work in 12 or 14 different parks, primarily with the children that are there, but somebody brings most of those children, although some of them were there on their own. But sometimes there's a grandparent or a parent or somebody sitting there while their kids are playing. So we also minister to the adults as well. But it was helping them build these relationships with these people, and then they pair up with local churches and try to do follow-up after the summer. The church invested $7,700 for this. Each person going paid about $515, plus if they had luggage or, you know, incidental fees like that. And we did what we'd call backyard Bible club or Bible lessons in the afternoon, building relationships with the kids, playing games, crafts, balloons, that kind of thing. And then we had a block party one of the nights for everybody in the neighborhood, and that was well attended as well.
Awesome. Okay, Sarah, you're first up to bat. Walk us through it. What was the how did God impact you the most throughout this trip?
It was just seeing how excited they were every day that we got there. They would be running up at the van that we couldn't even pull in yet, or when we leave, they would be behind, just not wanting us to leave. And just seeing their hearts ready to accept what we had. And so by the time that we left, I think five of them had their permission slip signed to go to church the following Sunday. So we got to see the end of it, like the whole summers, all the time they put in, we got to see the impact, which was great.
Awesome. Carol?
What do you want to know?
How are you personally impacted during this time?
Well, I learned a lot. I've been on mission trips before, but never this type of mission trip. And I think the thing that really hit me the hardest was knowing that only about 2% of people in Alaska claim to be Christians. And there are so many people up there that have never even heard the name Jesus. It was just mind-boggling to me, because having lived in the South for so long and, you know, the Bible Belt and all, and most of the mission trips I've been to now, I've been to Canada, and it's pretty bleak up there too. But this was really something. And I tell you, these young people that went with us really impacted me. I got to say that the parents and those that are leading, have been leading these youth, really are doing a good job. They were the workforce of this crew. They just did everything, and those older adults of us that were there, we just find it already done before we even thought about doing it. We had to, every morning, get drink jugs ready, coolers and snacks ready and all that, and we didn't even think about it. They just had it done and cleaned the coolers when they got back, and they were just right on it. They were just really a great group, and I did see some of the other groups that were with us, the adults with them having to tell them, "Come on, go do this. Quit playing basketball. Get over here. We got to get this ready," you know. So I was really impressed with our young people that went, and I won't call them kids, although they're kids to me, because they ranged in age from 17 to 22, but they were very responsible
Wonderful.
And really, I was really impressed with that.
So. All right. Now, for you, I'm going to ask you this question. It's a little different. I know we were still in America, but what challenges did you guys have to incur, or what obstacles might have been there that you guys had to kind of endure or conquer to be successful on the trip?
Answer that question first, but then I have a testimony beyond that. I think probably the biggest challenge was the fact that, you know, they were not a captive audience. These kids were playing in the park, and they would come and go. So they would come and sit down and listen to part of the Bible story, maybe, and then get up and go off and play on the playground. Mm-hmm. But they would also ask questions. There was a challenge because there's also a huge diversity of ethnicity there. Believe it or not, they told us that they have one high school there that has over 100 languages spoken in it.
Wow.
That's beyond understanding for me, that the diversity overall of people who come to the Anchorage area, and keep in mind, there's only like 750,000 people in the entire state of Alaska, so we're not talking about a huge population overall. That was probably the biggest eye-opener for me, realizing that we were working with a huge diversity of thought patterns and cultures, and the culture there is a bit different. On another aspect of things, first of all, I want to thank everybody who was involved in getting us to these mission trips. That's huge, the people that participated in the golf tournaments, etc. This, by the way, was my very first mission trip ever.
Awesome.
Ever. And I can tell you that last September, I was offered the opportunity to go on a cruise to Alaska. And I looked at my finances and went, I can't do this. But I really wish I could go. God heard that wish, and he gave me a different avenue to get there. And I got there. And that, to me, is just absolutely the most awesome thing, watching him work for his good. And I can't express how much I enjoyed this trip, enjoyed the kids, the park, the opportunity to be a part of a mission trip with this church. And I will second Carol's aspect of things as far as the young people that were with us. They were just incredible. We never had to ask them to do anything. They just stepped up and did it. It didn't matter what it was. They just picked up and did what needed to be done. And the parents and this church need to be, you know, thanked for their input in making these young people what they are.
Well, I want to say, as your pastor, thank you for being obedient, every one of you, for where you were, what you did, the mission that God had before you. We were blessed to be able to play a part in that. But we were even more blessed to be able to get to hear the stories how God used you at that time. So thank you for being the hands and the feet and the extension of Boulevard Verde Baptist Church in Brazil and then also in Alaska this summer. We really appreciate it and know that God is going to continue to impact you from that moment on for the rest of your life. So thank you for being here. We're going to transition a little bit. You guys are dismissed. You guys can go and have a seat.
Let me say something real quick, Paul, that I failed to say in the beginning. The way our church does these mission trips is the church pays for the expenses, food, meals, transportation, lodging, all of that, once we get to the mission location. But the missionaries that go pay for their expenses to get there. So, you know, like I said, the airfare, visas, passports, that kind of thing. Thanks to Barbara and Clift and all of you that participated in the golf tournament and the money that we took in Vacation Bible School by the kids bringing their pennies, we were able to offset what each missionary had to spend this summer by $345 each. And so that was huge because, you know, they would have paid, you know, over $1,000 to go to Rio. They paid $811. They would have paid $970 to go to the Amazon. They had to pay $500 and something. So it really, or $650, I'm sorry, the one to Alaska was $515. So, you know, that was huge, and I appreciate all of you being a part of that and making it possible for them to go and not cost as much.
Phil, I appreciate your leadership in this. From May to July, there were these moments. It's like, oh, Phil's on a mission trip. Oh, Phil's on a mission trip. And, you know, and to know that at that moment you were leading our people in another place and impacting a culture, impacting a community. And so I know that there's a lot of planning and a lot of, you know, where we're going to stay, where we're going to sleep, where we're going to eat, a lot of the details that most people just, it goes unnoticed and unchecked. And I've been on multiple mission trips with you. And if you've never been on a mission trip, it may be worth it just to go and to be with Bill. He is in his element when he is on the mission field. It is awesome to see him work and meet and greet. And he's like, oh yeah, I met this guy. We got transportation worked out. I'm like, how did you do that? He was just out on a morning run, loving life, loving people, and works out all the details that would just cause me to, you know, have my, you know, lose my hair at a young age. And so, Phil, thank you for your leadership, your dedication to the Lord and this church. It means a lot to me. So I'm going to transition and tell you a little bit about, you've heard how Bulverde Baptist Church has been involved in missions. I'm going to tell you how you also been involved in missions. And I'm going to set up by telling you a quick story. I had a friend once that made the comment about how they were supporting a church. And they were like, oh yeah, we support this church in this country. And that church has grown, and they've actually had other people come in, and they have started, you heard the word cell group, another group that meets a part of that church. And now there are two other churches that started in the last, you know, 10 years in this area. And our church has been a part of that. And so that's our involvement in missions. And I'm like, that is awesome. And I'm not going to, you know, take away anything from that church or what the Lord is doing in and through that group. And he's like, but y'all, as Baptists, because he's a different denomination, he's like, as Baptists, do y'all really, I mean, how do y'all support missionaries? I said, oh yeah, we support missionaries. And I didn't have these facts at the time, but I'm going to give them to you. We actually, as a Bulverde Baptist Church, support 3,674 missionaries overseas. As of right now, there are almost 3,700 missionaries that we as Bulverde Baptists get to impact and play a part in. Now, out of that, there are 5,097 local missionaries here in the United States. Now, a lot of those are considered our church planters, but so between those two, that's 8,000, almost 9,000 missionaries that we as Southern Baptists are investing in locally, here in our state, in our country, and around the world. So our impact as Bulverde Baptist Church is not one church planting two. It's 9,000 missionaries worldwide. And on top of that, the cooperating churches that we have here is 47,000 churches here in the continental United States that participate in international missions and the cooperative program as a Southern Baptist. Now, in the state convention, we have 41 churches. We have 41 churches, 41 cooperating states into the national convention. So almost close to 100% of our states cooperate in the national convention. Our local associations, just here in the state of Texas, 1,000 associations. Blue Bonnet, Saba. There are tons of smaller associations. So we as Bulverde Baptist Church pour into a local association. We align with Blue Bonnet Association over in New Braunfels with Robbie Partain. They do pastor training, they do church equipping, they do church revitalization. I'm sitting down with them and a church planner here in the San Antonio area, walking through how's our state and local missions partner with a church plant here in San Antonio. What does that look like? Is this a good fit? Is it not a good fit? Outside of the local association is the state convention. Then we have our national convention. We're just not one church doing a work here in Alaska. We are 47,000 churches working together. Also, if you want to say, well, how do I know that all this is working? Well, let me give you a little bit of stats. One thing I love about being a Southern Baptist is, do you remember not too long ago in our state where there was the shooting in El Paso? It's a tragic thing. It was unfortunate. There's a lot of evil and hate in the world. But here's the joy that I get out of that moment. That within hours of that horrific news, there were Texas Baptist men, representation of Southern Baptists on site, serving meals, hosting prayer support, grief counseling, And if it's a natural disaster, even physical labor, as in cutting down trees and clearing out roads. You know, when the hurricane came in and destroyed a lot of Houston, people were like, what can we do? What can we do? When it came in Corpus Christi, what can we do? What can we do? This is the great thing about being a Baptist. We're already there. That, I mean, now I'm not saying you don't need a place to volunteer. Matter of fact, you can go to the state and national convention and sign up to be a part of a local REACT team. And I would encourage you to do that. If you're retired and you love to do that and you love being a Southern Baptist, man, find a group, go to the state convention, say, I want to sign up to do training for disaster relief. And you'll get an email. There was a shooting in El Paso. We need you. You pick up your suitcase, you head off. And we have in the last year, in 2018, we served 2,289,315 meals as Southern Baptists here in the United States. That's what we did. Through all every disaster you saw, through every time the news, this is a horrific thing, you can know, rest assured, there are Southern Baptists involved in that. And we're not going to get the news attention. Channel 5 and Fox and CNN is not going to say, we are thankful so much that Southern Baptists showed up during this school shooting and did grief counseling. We're so glad that Southern Baptists showed up during this horrific event and served meals to all of our first responders out there. You'll hear things of like Red Cross and other organizations. You'll never hear about us. Why? Because we're unashamed of what we stand for. And those men and those women who serve in those disasters, in 2018, 550 people got saved. Recorded through the Southern Baptist Convention, 550 people got saved during these tragic events because we, as Baptists, stepped up and we already did it. Now, can you imagine what it would look like if every time there was a disaster, if I had to stand up on immediately, you know, after that and implore you guys to pack up and leave and go? You'd say, Paul, that's too great of a challenge. I can't do that. You're right. Because you're just one person, one church, one community. If every time I said, hey, you know, there's this need, we need to go into this country, this country, this country. We were in three countries. It took a huge financial investment between what the church members paid and the church itself invested, probably totals up closer to $25,000, $30,000. And we just went to three places. And I'm no world geography guy, but I think there's more places to visit than just Rio, Manao, and Alaska. Anchorage, Alaska at that. We're a small piece. And so that's why they call it the cooperative program, because we cooperate with other churches here in our own communities, people in San Antonio and New Braunfels and San Marcos and Blanco. And we all pull our resources together. And then we take those resources, we add them to a bigger resource to say that, you know what, as Baptists, there are almost 9,000 missionaries worldwide that are making a difference. But there are other things to do. And we have local things that we need to take care of. And we have church planners. Like I said, I had lunch with a guy, his name is Ryan Napier. He's the guy here in San Antonio looking to plant a church in the southeast side of San Antonio. North American Mission Board sees that this is a growing community. 100 families a week move into Como County. Or actually, I think it's a day. 100 families move into Como County. We're a growing area. We've got to reach these people for Christ. We may have to plant new churches. We may have to change our programming to reach these people. But the great thing is as a Baptist, we get to come together. We link arms with other churches and other pastors and other committees and other teams. You heard about the last group said that they were part of other teams and other organizations throughout the summer. What a great thing. I tell you what, I'm excited that I'm a Baptist because of what I get to do. I don't have to go to every single country. But as a Baptist, I know that I'm supporting every single country. I want to share to you this scripture where my heart beats for this kind of stuff. In Romans chapter 10, verses 9, it says, because if you confess with your mouth that Jesus is Lord, and you believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. For with the heart one believes and is justified, with the mouth one confesses and is saved. You jump down to verse 13. For everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. And then Paul writes these powerful, powerful questions, and we'll close with these things. How then will they call on him who they've not believed? And how are they to believe in him who they've never heard? And how are they to hear without someone preaching? And how are they to preach unless they're sent? How beautiful are the feet of those who preach the good news. When I look at these statistics to know that in the disasters of America, that 2,289,000 meals were served. And the money that we give to the cooperative program helped to support that, helped to house those disaster relief teams, those quick response teams who went and did that. The almost 9,000 missionaries worldwide in this earth that we live in, preaching the good news. The 550 people who will be in heaven because people said, here, let me serve you some food while you're cutting down trees. And we as Southern Baptists are serving other organizations, believers and non-believers. And I want to know why you do this. And they tell them about the Lord. How beautiful are the feet of those who are sent. We're all called to this. You may never step foot out of this country. You may never step foot on a mission field, but I want you to know the moment you step out of those doors, you're stepping onto a mission field. We have to change our mindset. And even though you may never have your passport stamped with another country, every time you give money to this church, it is going to a bigger thing than what our eyes can even see sometimes. So we're not just reporting saying that we impacted one church and this one church over the last 2 years has grown into two churches. We are 9,000 missionaries on top of 47,000 churches on top of making an impact for Jesus Christ. So thank you for your faithfulness. And when we get around to Annie Armstrong and Lottie Moon, these special mission offerings that go to make a bigger impact than what we will really ever see sitting in this room. So trust that God is doing a work, and he's doing a lot of that work through Baptists. And I thank you for your commitment. So let's stand and let's pray, and we'll be dismissed today. Lord, thank you so much for the fact that you're able to do things outside of our control. You're able to do things outside of our reach. We thank you for these men and women who went on the trip and were the hands and feet of you. God, we just pray that you would continue to do great works in this church, outside this church, and around the world. Let our minds and our eyes be opened to what you're doing, and let our hearts be willing to give and sacrifice to continue to make your name known. How are they to believe unless they hear? How are they going to hear unless we preach? And how are someone going to preach unless we're sent? Let our feet be beautiful because we are going in the name of Jesus. We love you. In your name we pray. Amen.